Susan. Nice to see you. Sorry about your cute little foot.
Oh, I know. It's my ankle. It's
your
my ankle.
Yeah, Susan is on crutches, guys. You should feel very sorry for her. 2020 has been fucked up for her.
And there's been some silver linings for me.
We were DMing and she was like, oh, by the way, I'm on crutches. And I was like, what? 2020 is your special year.
You know what? It's one of those years, you know, when like shit's going really well, like you feel like everything's great. Like you have that year where it's like everything is 100%. Good. And then you start to worry. Right. You're like, oh, totally. What's going to happen? And it's like when it rains, it pours.
We know exactly how that feels. And then for me personally, like I felt like it was just punch to the gut, punch, 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 punch to the gut. But for some reason, I'm in a great mood today. And I'm really excited about our guest. You guys are going to meet her. You're going to love her. I feel like the internet has called her Princess Jasmine. And I couldn't agree more.
She's
with
like
that.
The Indian version of Sarah Michelle Gellar. That's you know, her name, you guys. Okay, first off, if you watch Mixed Makeup, her name is Dr. Nina Desai. She's a
board
certified dermatologist. We absolutely love her. She has so much information about skin. And we always ask her about, you know, like adult skincare. But mm-hmm. then we realized we should be asking her about children's skincare. More importantly, the thing that we see the most in our fam Facebook group is moms asking about rashes.
Yeah.
That they see their kids have. And so we wanted to ask her about common rashes in babies.
You guys are going to hear us chat with her and she's so smart. But Susan, we have our own little fun questions we need to answer.
We do. You guys. So for every episode, we like to get in a couple popular questions from our Facebook group. Yeah.
OK, so I feel like I know these answers from you already.
I know your answers, but not everybody knows our answers.
OK, so the first question is, what are some of your tips for postpartum healing, like products too. You can throw them in. So I'll ask you first.
Okay.
I feel like you know more about products than I do.
Well, I do.
You're somebody who like researches products. You read Amazon reviews. You have your own line of products. And I'm always like, yeah, sure, whatever. Put it on me. I don't care as much. But I'm getting better about reading reviews.
You are very
I'm a
particular.
Big kid now.
Yeah. No, you're particular about certain things, but maybe I just enjoy the research of it.
You do.
I think
don't.
That's what
yeah,
it is.
For sure.
So for me, okay. So first off, for those that don't know, I had a C-section, two C-sections. So the stuff that I had got ready for postpartum healing didn't come into play at all. But I loved my Depends diapers.
Oh, yes.
I got the ones that were more like underwear, though. Like, I think I say cute. Diapers and women think that I'm talking about like a full on, like huge diaper, like my child or something. But they were more like sleek. They were those like, you know,
sleek, chic diaper. Adult diapers.
they were awesome. I got this pack of them and
sexy.
they pull on like their underwear and they're so much better than the stupid, you know, that like knit thing. Ali Wong called it like the Asian pear,
yes,
you know, netting.
I know exactly what you're
that
talking
stuff
about.
That they put on you at the hospital. It's so much better to have your own Depends because, you know, even if you have a C-section, they're gentle around your C-section incision area. And I loved my diapers so much.
Same.
That like at one point, I think I was 4 weeks postpartum, Erin goes, do you still need those diapers?
I'm getting a funny visual right now.
I was like, I guess I don't need to wear diapers anymore, but I really like them.
Oh my God.
And it's not because you guys, P.S. if you've never had a baby before, if you're pregnant with your first,
you're going to be traumatized by what she just said.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that you need diapers because you're actually peeing on yourself or anything. Which you could. You could do that too.
No,
you don't. Women don't realize that you're going to bleed. It's like the most intense period that you're going to get. Yeah. And it's just to get everything out of your body. Do you need to still wear diapers? They're not that sexy.
Oh my God, I'm crying laughing.
Yeah. So the diapers, Depend diapers, but they're not, like I said, you guys, they're not diapers. They're like, they're just like extra padded underwear, like granny underwear,
sure,
but they're
trying
sleeker.
To take it back. She's backpedaling. No,
I love it. I love them so much. I looked forward to mine. They were like the first thing I ordered on Amazon, like 4 weeks leading up to my labor.
Good. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good job putting it out there for the whole internet to hear.
There
too,
you go.
Susan wears diapers.
What's something for you?
Well, I love diapers too. And yeah. I distinctly remember a time when I was like, I don't know, 2 weeks out of having Cyrus. Idris was still in diapers And I took a photo and I posted it. And I was like, well, we're all three in diapers now.
Because, I know, I remember this.
Yeah. And it was just funny to me. And so I did like the diapers as well. And I've talked about this with you, and I'm sure I've said it on here. I'm like so far removed from when I first had both my kids, because Cyrus, by the time this goes up, he'll be four.
You know,
my little bear square will be four. So that's,
you're in a whole different season of motherhood.
Oh my God. I love this season, and I have loved it for a while.
I know.
And
I've been a little envious of it. I can feel like this whole new you, like, yeah. It seems so fun.
It is fun.
I'm like, I need to sleep more.
My sister came over the other day and my sister had her first solo night away from her daughter, and she came to sleep over at my house, and we had a really fun time, and we were in the hot tub, me and Shireen and Michael, and the boys were watching a movie in their little clubhouse. They have this new clubhouse. We transformed this closet into a kids club for them so they can have their own little cool room. It's awesome. And they were in there, you know, for an hour alone. And Shireen was like, is this just what life is like? Like, you can just be in a hot tub with wine and you know your kids are safe. And I was like, I laughed because I'm like, yeah, you're so far from that. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel, I kept saying to her.
You're in a hot tub with wine.
I know, exactly. And it's so funny because I do... Even though I don't remember the specifics of like what products I used and when, like things are blurry to me, but I do remember.
You're pushing it out of the memory.
I know. Well, I know. Well, you push traumas away.
Yeah, it's true.
But I do remember thinking that it was just so, so, so hard. And it was really hard for me to see a light at the end of the tunnel with my relationship with Michael. Like, when will we ever feel like free and sexy again to do shit like that? Like have drinks in a hot tub. Anyway, all that to say is that I don't remember what the fuck I used.
You got through it though.
I did. I got through it, and diapers were great. And for me, both times was like having family members around was, you know, so not a product, but those people helped me heal. Yeah. I got lucky. I had got to have my mom both times, but my sister was really close by both times too. So I got to boss everybody around.
Yep.
Got to boss Michael around. I got to order all the food that I wanted, you know, so those things helped me heal. It's just like, especially second time around with Cyrus, I was comfortable telling everybody what I wanted and getting what I wanted for those first, you know, few weeks when I said I couldn't walk.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. No. OK, so let's move on to question number two. And that is, what did you do for first birthday parties for your boys?
OK, so and I've talked about this before, but I knew my kids weren't going to remember it. I didn't want to spend a ton of money. I didn't want to make a big deal about it. So I didn't do anything for either one of their first birthdays. And I actually didn't do anything big until Idris turned four. That's when he had his first like really big fun party, and not like those LA birthday parties that you hear that are $100,000.
What?
This one was like a good old fashioned at my house birthday party, and he had a couple good ones. So first birthdays, we didn't do anything. I see moms that put unnecessary pressure on, you know, themselves to have an Instagram or Pinterest perfect party. But I'm not like that. I wanted to just make sure we had a nice little day. I didn't do the cake smash thing. My kids didn't really have a ton of sugar when they were one. So they had yogurt, and I put a candle. I remember, I think with both kids, I gave them some Greek yogurt and put a candle in it.
Oh, I don't even think I realized that.
Yeah. And
I knew that they didn't have sugar when they were younger. Yeah. But I don't remember you doing that with their first birthday. I guess Idris, I wouldn't maybe remember. We weren't that tight yet.
Yeah. But
Cyrus, I don't remember that. But yeah, you know, I don't think it's necessary at all to have a huge birthday party. Isla just turned one.
I know, and you didn't do anything. If you did, you didn't invite me.
Well, no, we did. We got her. I do love the cake because they haven't had cake up until that point. I actually make it a point. Like, even if we do have cupcakes
her first
or cakes,
sugar experience.
Yeah,
it's birthday.
Like, let's make sure that the cake is on the first birthday.
And you have more of a sweet tooth just in
general. Oh my
general.
Gosh. I have such a sweet tooth. Yeah. But you know what I will say though? I'm not one of those people that wants to have like a Pinterest perfect birthday party. Even for Nikosh, the birthday parties we've had now, I found that I'm so busy during the birthday party. I'm not even taking pictures anyway. So it's not about that. But I will say, because of COVID, Nikosh had his birthday party
right before.
In February, he had his third birthday party. And I'm so glad that we did that because it's the last time that we got all of his friends together yeah. in one place like that, where we weren't worrying about anything. We didn't even know this was coming.
Right, of course.
And we all got to like have a good time and do that. So in some ways now I'm like, well, I'm glad for all the celebrations I've ever done.
Totally.
Now that I've had them taken away from me.
I know.
You know?
I know.
So that, I will throw that out there. But for first birthday parties, it really, it's really not that big a deal in my opinion. You're going to have so many more parties later.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, if you want to do it and you've got tons of money, great. But, yeah. you know, don't put the pressure on yourself, I guess, is my point. So on that note, we're going to get into our episode after these short little messages. This episode of FAM is brought to you by OxiClean. We're fans of OxiClean over here.
We sure are lately.
OxiClean, OxiClean.
Well, it feels like we're spending more time inside now that it's gotten colder.
Just a little chilly.
I know. And because we're inside, there are more messes to clean up inside.
True dat. What are you doing for the holidays? Like, what's your Thanksgiving sitch
Thanksgiving sitch, I am getting things ready for my family to potentially come, but it might just end up being us, me and Arun's family, like his parents in our house. So I'm, you know, cleaning up all of our linens. I'm finding old stains and I've been using my OxiClean to actually get the old stains out. And it's surprising how well it works to get old stains out. Like the ones that you just kind of like let it be. I don't know in my mind why I thought that I was never going to use my old linens again for the holidays, but
bust them out.
Here they are with old stains. And guess what? My OxiClean is cleaning them out. It's amazing. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you know, you guys have got to try OxiClean, versatile stain remover for yourself. To work your magic with OxiClean, go to oxiclean.com/try me and order a free sample. That's oxiclean.com/TRYME for a free stain fighting sample while supplies last. Hi, Dr. Desai.
Dr. Desai. I call her Nina as a friend, but when we're on camera, we say Dr. Desai.
You are a doctor. You earn that. And I will always call you Dr. Desai.
You are so sweet. Hi, Susan. Hi, Charizard. How are you guys?
So good. I've been really good lately. I've been listening to all my like girl power empowerment music when I like drive up here. So I come with my energy up a lot of Britney, a lot of work bitch going on in my car on the way up here. A lot of guys looking at me because I was going crazy in the car.
I love it.
Anyway, how are you?
Good. I'm good. Just, you know, a lot of craziness all the time, but in a good way. So can't complain.
Well, you've got a lot going on and we're going to talk about that. But first, let's get into the common questions. You want to hit her with the first one?
Yes.
I love it.
What are your best postpartum healing tips and products? You have three kids.
Yeah.
Yes. I have three kids. So healing, you mean in terms of after delivery?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because they don't hear anything from us except for C-section stuff.
So after a vaginal delivery, everything is going to be extremely, you know, tender, extremely uncomfortable. So in terms of healing that area, there are a couple of tips that I recommend. And one of them is the Witch Hazel Tux pads. You put them in the refrigerator. They're nice and cold and they're extremely soothing to, you know, women who've just had a vaginal delivery. And they really help to bring down a lot of inflammation in that area. So in terms of healing for post-delivery or post-vaginal delivery, that's one of my absolute favorite products. And you just kind of switch them out every couple of hours because that soothing is just so important to that inflamed tissue.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
I obviously didn't use it because C-sections.
I had them in my hospital bag, actually. And then I didn't end up using them because I had an emergency C-section.
Fun.
So at that point, all it is about comfort and soothing the area, because over time that scar tissue will heal. And if you had, you know, a tear or an episiotomy and you've had, you know, stitches in that area, you're going to be just so much more sensitive and so much more tender. So that's why you really don't want to use too much in that area other than soothing products. So that would be the one that I would say, you know, pack in your bag or have waiting for you at home, because it does take a little while for that area to heal. So you are going to need them for a couple of weeks for sure.
Got
to
heal the vag.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you do. And one thing that I find that women don't do post postpartum that they really, really, really need to do in terms of healing their body is staying well hydrated. Mm. So water is like your best friend after you deliver. If you are nursing, you are just completely dehydrated all the time and you're not sleeping, and keeping your body well hydrated is really going to help that area heal as well.
Good tips.
Very, very good tips. Second question, yes. Not even in the same ballpark of like what we just talked about, but what did you do for your baby's first birthday? And you have three kids, three boys. So did you do something different for each one?
Oh, I did. So in typical mom fashion, for the first one, you know, threw out all the stops. So we had rented a hall and we had like a bouncy house, wow, and a photographer. And my first two kids were born on the East Coast as the weather was getting colder. So my first son, his birthday party, we had all this planned, and then there was a snowstorm. The first snowstorm at the end of October. So, you know, whoever made it really got to enjoy all that I had put together for him. My second son was a little bit, you know, that second child, his first birthday party was actually a joint birthday party with his brother.
Nothing wrong with that.
Because they were like a week apart. So, you know, my second son's first birthday party was also my first son's second birthday party. And then my third son, you know, we kind of just threw a table together in the park and had a few friends over. So with each child, I think it got a little bit, you know, more quiet. Not that, you know, I didn't love each party and each child just exactly the same, but I think I realized after the first child that that first birthday party is more for the adults as opposed to for the child, because obviously they don't remember any of it.
Yep.
So I kind of realized that. So with each one, it was a little bit smaller.
Got it. Got it. Yeah. Did you do any themes? Because I constantly see moms in our group asking, like, what's a good theme? Especially lately, they're like, what's a good COVID-friendly birthday idea?
Yeah. So COVID-friendly is a little bit different. So my first son, he was born right around Halloween. So we did like a Halloween costume theme, which I think is always so fun for the kids, especially the little ones, seeing them all dressed up in their costumes. And now that it's fall and things tend to be a little bit more outdoors, I think that actually would be like a COVID-friendly theme party for one-year-olds right now, because unfortunately, we're not going to be doing too much over Halloween. So an idea I would have would be, you know, to have a little outdoor, you know, dress up party for kids. You know, it kind of hits two birds with one stone. It tackles your first birthday party. But then also if your kid's a Halloween baby, you know, you can kind of do a safe little candy exchange or something like that. So COVID friendly is a little bit trickier, a little bit harder. I totally get it. But for those of you who live like us in warmer areas, right now it's a little bit easier because we still can be outdoors. So I'm a big fan of that little outdoor birthday party.
We're going to switch gears now to the juicy part of this whole conversation, which is all the skin concerns. One of the most popular things we see in the Facebook group is photos of kids with rashes.
Yeah, like every day. There is always some type of rash from or head to toe. Irritation on the face, on the head.
Yeah. And I think it'd be good to know like when to worry, when to go see somebody, how to care for certain things. Like I remember being told, and you can obviously correct me if I'm wrong because you're the expert here, that you should like draw a circle around an infection. And if it goes beyond that, then that's like a sign that you should be worried. But you know, this is stuff I'm like, did I read this? Did I hear this? Did I see? I don't know where, yeah, how it got into my brain. So anyway, I feel like it's almost like a Mythbusters. You are going to bust the myths of what we should do.
Yeah.
With skin
and
rashes.
When should we be worried?
Yeah. When should we be worried? So, yeah, you have three kids. You've obviously seen a lot of skin.
Let's start with what are some of the most common things that you see with
kids? Yeah, that's a good place to start.
Common things are going to be like those red, itchy rashes that come up all the time. And we can see everything from like, you know, cradle cap. If you start with like really young kids, you have that cradle cap, to really common rashes like atopic dermatitis or eczema. That's probably the most common thing we see in children. This sort of rash is genetic. So typical questions I'm going to ask you if you come in and you tell me my child has this red itchy rash and they're scratching all the time is, how long have they had this rash? Anybody else in the family ever had something like this? Because eczema, and the childhood form, or atopic dermatitis, runs in the same genetic spectrum as seasonal allergies, hay fever, and asthma. So you're going to find that more often than not, you're like checking these boxes. You're like, oh yeah, my kids have that too, or a family member has that as well. And then you kind of realize that this is one of those common rashes that your child is just going to be genetically prone to, and it's going to wax and wane. It tends to get better as they get older, but there are so many things that we can do at home to really alleviate this rash and to make sure that they don't keep getting flares. And that's one of the most common things that I spend my time with parents talking about when kids have this atopic dermatitis, is how do we prevent these flares? And really what you want to do is you want to make sure that your child is so well hydrated, and you want to make sure that there's no irritants kind of irritating your child's skin. So basics are going to be that when you have this red, itchy rash, you know, typical areas for atopic dermatitis or eczema are going to be the antecubital fossa, so inside of the arms and the backsides of the legs. But it really can happen anywhere. Scalp, I see it a lot around the mouth, because kids, you know, especially when they're small, they tend to drool or have pacifiers, things like that. They get really red, itchy rashes around their mouth as well. So those are all telltale signs that this is what's going on. And we just want to make sure that first we're removing all the irritants. So things that are really, you know, kind of fragrant. So everything that goes on their skin has to be fragrance-free and hypoallergenic. That's your soaps, that's your laundry detergents. We really want to make sure that you're hydrating the skin. So really good moisturizers. And children are the ones that I really like to recommend those thicker, more occlusive moisturizers, because we are trying to preserve and lock in all the moisture that they have. So things that are a little bit greasier.
Yeah, Aquaphor, CeraVe, Healing, yeah, Healing Balm, Healing Ointment.
Exactly. Things that, you know, us as adults wouldn't love how we feel on their skin. We really want to lather them all up on our child if our child does have atopic dermatitis. So, and then we really want to kind of minimize how much water exposure they're having, because that can really dry out the skin. So, you know, if you have a little baby who loves to play around in the bubble bath and they're in there for like 10 to 15 minutes, you're going to notice that if they're genetically prone to atopic dermatitis, their skin's going to really dry out, and then they're going to get more itchy. So it's hard to kind of drag our children out of that bath. I know my children love the bubble baths too, but you have to be really, really strict about 5 minutes in the tub, no more than that. When they get out, when their skin is still moist, put on that ointment and really lock in the moisture. If you do that consistently for a couple of weeks, those red, itchy rashes that you find your kids are scratching at, they're going to be so much better.
Can they get that on like their scalp too? Or is that really just cradle cap?
Yes. No, you can get eczema on your scalp as well. And there's a few ways to distinguish between them. And the easiest one is, do we have this rash other places on our body? So cradle cap or seborrheic dermatitis is more likely going to happen in the scalp, in the eyebrow areas, places where we tend to have a little bit more of that hair bearing area. But eczema really can happen in those other areas that I mentioned. So you're looking at the arms, you're looking at the legs, you're looking at even the groin area. So, you know, location is really important. And the treatment is kind of similar. You know, with cradle cap, you really want to keep their scalp really well hydrated as well. But there is also like a little bit of yeast buildup when it comes to cradle cap. So you may actually need a medication that helps to take care of that yeast, almost like a dandruff shampoo. So treatment can be a little bit different. So I would just say, look at the locations. If it's just scalp, first thing you try is really hydrating the scalp. Scalp is one of those areas where I do love to use oils to really massage into the scalp. It really helps to loosen those flakes that kids get in that cradle cap, and then really try to comb out your kids' flakes. It really does work. And then if that's not cutting it, that you may want to talk to your dermatologist about an anti-yeast shampoo or a leave-on to help kind of break down that Malassezia yeast that's contributing to the cradle cap. For eczema, if they are really itchy and scratching almost to a point where they're breaking the skin, I really want to see them in the office, or I really want you seeing your doctor, because that's actually a flare. Your eczema is inflamed. It needs to be treated, because once you start that itch scratch cycle, it just continues until you kind of calm down the itch. And oftentimes that needs an actual medication put on that eczema flare. The other thing you want to you want to make sure it's not happening. If they're scratching so much and we're not treating it, you're breaking the skin. When you break the skin, that's when you're going to be more prone to infection. So Shahrzad, what you said about that area where you circle it and you look to see if it's spreading, that's typical for an infection on the skin. So that is a sign that your infection is spreading. If your rash is, you know, just a typical eczema, red, and it's not infected, yes, it can spread, but it may not be something that you need an absolute, it may not be something that's infected that you need to be on an antibiotic or being treated with an antibiotic for. So what you kind of talked about is more typical of a spreading infection when you circle it and you look to see what's happening. That being said, anytime your child has a fever and a rash, you do want to go to the doctor. So fever is one of those things where you do want to kind of tweak out, is this rash infectious? And when you have a fever, that's what you're thinking. So there are a lot of infections that can cause rashes too. And one can be an eczema that got infected. And that's typically a bacterial infection that's treated that way. But there's also a lot of viruses that can cause rashes as well. So I urge, you know, any child with a fever and a rash goes to their pediatrician or their dermatologist to kind of really hone in on what's causing that fever and is the rash related? And then how do we treat it? Is it a bacterial infection? Is it a fungal infection or is it a viral infection? So we really need to tweak out fever and rash because we need to get you on the right treatment.
Isla got roseola. Mm-hmm. Which is like a baby virus that mm-hmm. I had no idea about. And that causes rash. Like she just, I mean, the doctor was like, when she gets the rash, that's a good sign. It means like she's on her path to like healing. Mm. But she looked like, honestly, it looked like I'd put the worst skincare products on her or something. Like she was just inflamed and red and unhappy. And it was like that for like 3 days.
Poor little thing.
Yeah, all over her face and body.
Aww.
That's not an uncommon rash and virus for kids to get. So, you know, there's a lot of viruses out there that trigger fever and rash in kids. And some of them, just like what you said, Susan, that rash is going to be the end of the virus. But there's some where that rash, you know, kind of means the virus is kind of picking up and we want to make sure we're keeping our child home and we're not exposing other people to that. Because a lot of these viruses can be kind of contagious, especially between children. So fever and rash, see your pediatrician or your dermatologist, because that is something that we need to tweak out what's going on.
I know this might be a bad word for Susan to hear, so you might want to plug your ears, but coconut oil on the scalp, is that a yes or is that just a hard no?
So the scalp is one place that I would say yes to.
Okay, good to know.
But, you know, in children, it's obviously different because they're not at that stage where that coconut oil is going to clog things and create other issues. But the scalp and only the scalp is an area that, you know, I would recommend hydrating coconut oil, using coconut oil as a hydrator for kids and adults. There are a lot of good moisturizers out there to hydrate the body for children and for adults. And the main ingredient that I look for when you're shopping for a good moisturizer for your child is ceramides. Because when you have red, itchy, scaly rashes on your child's body, that means that their skin barrier is compromised. And when their skin barrier is compromised, they are losing water through that compromised skin barrier. They are not maintaining their hydration. So using a product with ceramides is going to help rebuild that skin barrier and it's going to make them get better faster and it's going to make them feel less itchy faster.
Okay. Can we talk about butts? Little cute diaper butts? Because that's another thing that I feel like I dealt with. I actually, it's funny. You're talking about
you dealt
skin.
with baby butts?
Well, and just I personally have had an itchy skin stitch like my entire life has been so sensitive. Yep. Anybody who watched the SAS knows this. I know Dr. Desai, you know this because I come to see you. But so I'm so fascinated to learn about what causes so much itchy skin. And I didn't realize that like sitting in water potentially could exacerbate the itchiness. So I feel like my whole life has been a lie. Nobody's ever told me that before, because that was one of the first things. This is a selfish moment for me. Sorry, everybody. But that was one of the first things I would always do if I was having some kind of itchy flare up was sit in a tub and soak. And now I'm learning that that's been a bad on my part. I think I've always had like a reaction to something like clothing or laundry detergent or even something I'm eating that causes a flare up. But anyway, I did want to talk about butts because diaper rash is a huge thing. And I'd love to know, some causes for that. In my mind, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's like if you let your kids sit in a wet diaper for too long, maybe they can get a little rash. And then I'd love to know what your favorite butt pastes are.
Yeah.
Or if you like the old school Johnson & Johnson's baby powder that's been around for like 120 years.
No.
Oh, okay, good.
I want to back up just real quick to address what you were saying. And the water is such a big component of that. And, you know, it's a really common myth that water is going to make us feel better. And the hot water, initially it does. It feels really good on that dry, itchy skin. But what's happening is it's just actually triggering more itch and more inflammation. So you're absolutely right in the sense that that was not the right thing to do. And
shit.
And those that have, you know, that sensitivity, it's just what I said. It's that genetic mesh or that pool of, you know, itchy skin, allergies, you know, food, the sensitivities, anything and everything that kind of goes along that genetic spectrum, we ask about and we try to kind of hone in on what the issues are. In terms of diaper rash or diaper dermatitis in kids, there are a couple of different causes and we really need to kind of treat the cause. And that's why we ask a bunch of questions for that too. First is, where is the rash? So is the rash kind of right under where the diaper is, or does it kind of extend beyond the diaper? We can have both a contact dermatitis and an irritant dermatitis from the diaper. So an allergic contact and an irritant contact. And those are a little bit different. An irritant contact is exactly what you said. Someone sitting in that soppy, wet diaper for hours on end, or you know, your child is sleeping through the night and you don't want to wake them up to change their diapers. And I never wake a sleeping baby. So I've been there. And you wake up in the morning and their skin looks more red, more itchy, more irritated because they've had that, you know, that pee in their diaper all night. That is an irritant dermatitis. And the correct way to treat that is to get rid of the irritant. So we do want to be more vigilant about changing their diaper more often and then protecting the skin. So providing a barrier between that pee or that urine and the skin. So something as simple as a barrier repair cream, whether it's a diaper ointment or whether it's something simple like Aquaphor or a CeraVe healing ointment, either one would be absolutely fine because what it's doing is it's providing that barrier. Contact dermatitis, an allergic contact dermatitis, means that your child actually is allergic to a component of the diaper. And it could be something in the adhesive, it could be something in the material, and that would cause a lot more redness and itching. And you would see it with certain diapers as opposed to other diapers, depending on what brand you're using. So that's another important thing to tease out as well. When the diaper rash is, you know, really inflamed, the thing I also look for is what we call pustules, these white little bumps in the diaper area. And that means that now that area has become infected. And when we have this moist environment, it's more susceptible to breeding yeast and bacteria. So there's a yeast buildup that can happen in diaper dermatitis a lot of times, and it's typically a candida yeast. So the way we look for that is you kind of look around the diaper rash and you get what's called these little satellite lesions. So the yeast actually creates these tiny little satellites around the edge of the rash. And that's a little indication that there may be a yeast buildup there. If it's bacterial, sometimes it gets a little crusty, and then we know that there's a bacterial buildup there. I also always look not just in the front area, but you want to check the backside as well. So, you know, the diaper rash can be in the groin area, but it can extend to the perianal area as well. So always check both the groin area and the perianal area and make sure that we're looking at both those areas and we're treating both those areas.
If the rash gets bad like that, you start to see these little lesions or the dots or something like that, should you go see a doctor? Because I actually
Absolutely.
Don't recall seeing a doctor at all for poor Nikosh. Always had diaper rash and stuff. Isla not as much, but Nikosh always.
I do, especially if your child has chronic diaper rashes.
Okay.
So there are children that just, you know, whether, and the other thing we talked about before that I didn't mention right now is sometimes they can get an eczema in that area too. So there's a bunch of different things that can trigger a rash in the diaper area. If you can get it under control at home with a simple barrier cream, then there's really no reason to see your pediatrician or your dermatologist. But if you're having trouble getting that rash under control at home with an over-the-counter barrier cream, then I do urge you to see your pediatrician or your dermatologist just for the reasons that I mentioned, because we want to treat that yeast if the yeast is building up, or we want to treat that bacteria, or if there's an allergic or a contact or an irritant dermatitis going on, we want to treat that as well.
It's so funny talking about this. I just remembered when we were in Chicago a few years ago and Idris was like, I guess, 1.5. He was under 2 because I was pregnant with Cyrus, and he got some crazy rash. And I can't remember what it was called. He didn't have a fever, though. And it was growing and growing and it looked insane. And so we took him to the hospital in Chicago and they were great. And I'm blanking on what it was. But that brings up this other question is, could you have a rash with no fever, but that needs to be seen by a specialist for sure?
Absolutely. So fever and rash must be seen. But there's a lot of times that you have a rash that you also need to be seen.
Okay.
So, and that is the rash that you cannot get under control.
Yeah.
So whenever you have a rash in your child that you are trying your very best to treat at home and it is not getting better or it is spreading, that is an indication that yes, you should absolutely see your doctor, because a lot of these rashes, unless they're treated in the right way, they won't go away and they can be itchy. And then you're going to have a child that's scratching, that's breaking the skin. And then you're going to go down this whole rabbit hole of where you may then get an infection. So anything that, you know, kind of you feel like I've tried figuring this out at home and it's doesn't seem to be getting better, that is something that we want to see for sure.
You know, I have a question. How about cortisone? What do you think about parents using cortisone on their babies?
So I think only if your doctor tells you to use it, should you use it.
Okay.
There are a lot of conditions in which I do use cortisone on. And even if it's a quick phone call to your pediatrician's office or a quick phone call to your dermatologist's office, there are certain infections that when you put cortisone on can actually get worse. And a yeast infection is one of them. So you really want to make sure you're treating the right thing. If you know your child has a history of eczema, you have already gone to the doctor, you've already been diagnosed, and another red, itchy, scaly rash comes up and you have the proper medication at home, yes, then I would say go ahead and start treating it because you know what you're treating. But if you don't know what you're treating, that's when it becomes a little bit difficult to start putting things on, especially something with a medication like a cortisone in it. Because then when you eventually do go to the pediatrician, you may, or the dermatologist, you may have actually changed the picture of what the rash looks like. And it does kind of make things a little bit trickier. So if the rule of thumb with cortisones is if you know what you're treating, if you've already been to your doctor and you have the right medications, then yes. If you don't, then I would say go before you start treating it.
Are there any kind of side effects you can get from putting cortisone on your child also, or on yourself even?
Yes. So cortisone, what it does is it's an anti-inflammatory, and I use cortisones all the time. I think they work fabulously when they're used appropriately in the right strength. But with long-term use of cortisones, you really can thin the skin. So mild cortisones, obviously like over-the-counter ones, it's going to take a lot to do that. But with repetitive use, with chronic use, you really can notice that the skin gets thinner. You can have some pigmentary issues. So you can start to lose pigment in certain areas of the skin if you're using too much cortisone that's too strong. By thinning the skin, you also trigger blood vessel formation. So you may notice that you have more broken capillaries if you've been using cortisone for too long. You can also, with adults and with adolescents even, you can trigger acne with cortisone use. So steroid-induced acne is something that we see all the time. And then you can also have something that's called rebound. So when you're using a steroid for a long period of time, whether you're a child or an adult on a condition, and it seems to be getting better, when you withdraw that steroid, you flare because your body has become so dependent on it. So you're getting this rebound. So there are a lot of issues that can happen with using steroids long-term that occur on the skin. So it's really important to do it under the care of your dermatologist and make sure you're using the right product.
I definitely want to talk about like how women's skin changes when they become pregnant and after. I remember with being pregnant with Idris, I had all these splotches on my arm that weren't super noticeable to anybody except me, but I was just so fascinated by it. And then they went away. And then with Cyrus, I didn't get any of the same kind of splotches. And I never like really talked about it or took a photo of it or anything like that. And I don't even remember if it had a name other than, you know, just some sort of hormonal change in my skin.
I had skin tags, which was so weird to me. Like, wait, just little ones, just little tiny ones. I got a couple under my arms. It was so strange.
Well, that's where so I had common. Really. That's where I had my like little discoloration.
Interesting.
And it totally went away.
Wait, so why is this?
Yeah.
Okay. So everything and anything can change during pregnancy. As we all know, between all the kids that we've had, your body goes through all these changes and hormones can produce these changes like pigmentary changes. So a lot of women notice that they're going to have streaks of pigment. Sometimes it's on the arms. A lot of times it's down the middle of the belly. A lot of times it's on the face. And sometimes it goes away when we deliver and sometimes it doesn't. So pigmentary issues are things that can definitely come up. I see a lot of changing moles during pregnancy as well. So women, oftentimes I'll say, you know, before things get too busy, before you have the baby, come on in, let's do your skin check. Let's just take a look at what has changed during pregnancy so we know if there's anything that we need to monitor or watch, because things can get a lot darker. Moles can get darker. They can get bigger. They can look funny during pregnancy. So always want to keep an eye on that. Skin tags is definitely one of the most annoying things that happen because of that hormone change. And under the arms is really common, around the neck and in the groin area. I take skin tags off postpartum women all the time. Because, they're really, really common to get during pregnancy. Another really common thing to get is little red dots. They're called cherry angiomas, and they're also triggered by those hormones during pregnancy. And a lot of women will get them on their belly, and a lot of women will get them anywhere else on the torso. But that is one of the common things we find during pregnancy as well. So a lot of fun things can happen.
That's so funny.
So I didn't know about the skin tags.
Yeah, I got weird little tiny ones under my underarms. I got a couple of those like cherry angiomas.
Angiomas.
I got a couple of those. And then I obviously got the best one. I got the mask of pregnancy.
Oh, yes. The pregnancy mask. I know about that. Well, I feel like we covered the bases, and now I want to talk about you, Dr. Desai.
Yeah, we have like 5 minutes left.
I know you're a busy woman, but I want to talk about, like, you've got a lot of fun personal things going on. Let's talk about your new business. Like, when can I come and see you in person in real life? Are you open?
When are we going to get treatments?
I am so excited because I am opening my first solo practice in Manhattan Beach. And I should hopefully be open by late fall, early winter. So definitely before the end of the year. So I'm super excited about that. But it's been a really fun but crazy time because the building that I'm building this practice out is a brand new building. So I get to design it exactly as I want it. So super fun. So I'm really excited to have you guys in. I'm really excited to open my doors. I'm going to be focusing on all types of derm. Medical and cosmetic are my bread and butter. So I can't wait to get my, you know, my lasers in and start having some fun in there. But it's an exciting time for me.
And how do you schedule self-care for yourself being, you know, a very busy, successful working mom of three? How do you like carve out a little bit of time to do like your skincare routine, or what does self-care look like in your world?
So I've become very fast at my skincare routine.
Nice.
And I'm a big fan of less is more. So I will make sure that every night before I go to bed, I have my 5 minutes to myself. That's really what I do for myself. And it's not a long time. And it's when I make sure my skin is cleansed. I make sure I'm using my active ingredients. I make sure that I'm really hydrating my skin because, you know, when your skin is dehydrated, as we talked about, every single fine line and wrinkle shows up. So everything that I do for myself, I really do in those like 5 minutes before I go to bed. But that's the stage of life that I'm in right now. And I'm okay with it. And I do absolutely take that time. So if you're a busy mom and you're doing 100 different things, don't feel like, you know, you're doing anything wrong by not focusing on yourself. You should focus on yourself. You should always make sure that you find one or two things that really matter to you, whether it's working out, whether it's definitely should be your skincare routine at night. Whether it's just those two things, just make the time for yourself, because you'll be so much better to your family and to your work if you do take that little bit of time for yourself.
Yeah. What would you say are the most important products to have in your morning and nighttime skincare routine? And one of the things that I've always loved that you said is that morning is to protect your skin. Nighttime is to repair your skin. So what do we use?
100%. So morning, keep it simple. Cleanse your skin, gentle cleanser. Be really gentle with your skin in the morning, and a protector. So an antioxidant is one of my favorite things to use in the morning. So I always grab my vitamin C every morning, and then your sunscreen, absolute must. I don't care if it's winter, and I don't care if you're a skin type 5/6 and you have really dark skin. Everybody needs a really good sunscreen every day, because it's going to be the best product you can do to protect yourself from all those external aging factors. So sun really does age us. So morning, keep it simple, but don't forget to protect your skin. At night, you really want to make sure that you repair your skin. So when you sleep is the time that you can do your repair work. So if you have just a couple of minutes at the end of the day, the first step, just make sure that your skin is really well cleansed. Make sure you're starting with a clean palette, so you're not leaving any dirt or oil or pollution or makeup behind on your face at night, because that's just going to create more problems when you're sleeping. And it's going to make your skin look more dull and break you out. So really starting with that fresh palette before you go to bed. And then you really want to pick the products that you know work for you. So the basics would be something that's going to help rebuild the collagen that we're all losing. So as women, as we get older, after the age of 20, our body is going to produce 1% less collagen each year. That's a lot of collagen we're losing.
Great.
We are also going to find that the elastin in our body is thickening. So the elastin and the collagen, that is the structure. Those are the two structural proteins that really make our skin look youthful. They give our skin elasticity and fullness, so, and tightness. So if we're not helping our body by doing everything we can to preserve and rebuild our collagen and elastin, that's how we're going to age faster. So products like retinol are going to be your best friend. If you had to pick one nighttime product to use, that would be it, because that vitamin A, there's the most scientific evidence behind it that that is going to help rebuild the collagen. So keep it simple, but find time for yourself.
I feel like that's why you and Susan get along so well, because you said the magic word, retinol. Well, Dr. Desai, I know you've got a role. You've got, you know, just to take over the world right now and take care of them babies. But thank you so much for coming on here and dropping all your skin knowledge.
Yep.
And if people want to stalk you, as they should, your what's your Instagram handle again?
It's at Dr. Nina Desai. And the name of my practice is Pure Dermatology and Aesthetics. So I'm excited for you guys to come join me there.
We'll be there.
Awesome. Well, lots of love to you. And we will see you soon in real life, I hope.
Bye.
Have a good one. Enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. This was so fun.